Now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hayes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I'm your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we will be talking with Kevin Morris Lewis, who is the owner of the Impulse Gay Social Club in Charlottesville, about the gay bar scene in Charlottesville and about sort of the gay community in general. How you doing?
I'm good.
Thank you for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there. I know you had a late night of it because I had half of it with you.
Yeah.
But it was super of you to come in so early today. Tell me about your. Tell me a little bit about your history and how you ended up doing this. I mean, where'd you grow up? How'd you end up in this position where you're running this bar?
Let's see. I grew up in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
I went to private schools most of my life, but you know, I still am from Charlottesville. Family's from Charlottesville. Everything.
Where'd your family live?
Here in town. The surrounding counties too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a last name Morris, that's not too hard to.
Yeah, Morris. Morris sounds like Greene County to me.
Yeah, most of them are from Greene County. Yes.
Is that where some of your family is?
It still is, yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. Quite a large family.
Where'd you go to school?
Went to Fork Union for a while.
Uh-huh.
Day student, because we lived right in Fork Union, so uh-huh. I would walk to school.
And, so you lived back in the days of the drive-in.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
remember the drive-in. I came here in 89, and I remember by the time I was in law school, I had a pickup truck, and I would put a couple futons in the back of the pickup truck and drive out to the drive-in and lay in the bed of the truck and watch movies and eat sushi. You know, it just seemed like such a lovely cross-cultural moment.
Yeah, sushi in the drive-in.
Sushi in the drive-in.
Love it.
Yeah, occasionally a watermelon or something,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. We call that trout on a grill.
Trout on a grill. Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, when did you know that you were part of the gay community? When did you come to that realization? Is it something that you grew up always knowing? Or?
Well, I think growing up, going to private schools gave me the chance to be who I was without a lot of ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess being looked down upon by the family because it was a different life in school versus life at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it came to realization when I was keeping a journal, and my journal kind of disappeared, and one of my uncles actually read it.
Uh-oh.
And brought it to my family's attention. Of course, uh-huh. Most of the women in the family were like, oh, we already knew. You know, everyone was pretty cool except one or two of my uncles.
How old were you?
13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I knew much earlier.
Yeah.
And I think even for guys at that time, me being a normal guy at the time, I tried to say, okay, you know, I'm going to live up to how do you know unless you try.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, those things happen.
Yeah. And,
I,
you know, my family's never looked down on me for it. I think in the beginning, some of them had some reservations of, you know, well, don't do this or don't act this way
mm-hmm.
or, you know, don't say this, you know. And I think they were always scared that, you know, like my grandmother or somebody like that was going to have a problem with it.
Right.
But grandma was the one that told me straight out, I know, I don't care, I love you, you know, forget what anyone else thinks, just be who you are. So I take that to, you know, into consideration every day I wake up. Who am I and where I want to go? And I think about what she said and I do it.
I hear you. I can imagine Fork Union doesn't strike me as a place that would be super liberal or super understanding or accepting.
No, it wasn't.
And when are we talking about? I mean, I don't want to out your age too bad.
No, I'm 45. I love being my age. I have no problem with my age. I was around 10, 11, just for 1 year went there. At the time, I was having problems with my father, so, mm-hmm. you know, I begged my mom, could I go away for school,
mm-hmm.
and so they sent me away to school, and It was a lot of fun. Coming home, visits were fun. Eventually, I decided 10th grade, I wanted to be back home and try public school. And
right.
So I did 11th and 12th in Charlottesville High.
Okay.
Whoa.
Whoa. Tell me about what 11th and 12th grade was like in Charlotte. That would have been in the late 80s, yeah?
Yeah, 88, 89, 90. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 90. Yeah, so yeah, that time. It was a different, you know, you're going from structured school. Mm-hmm. Where people had respect for the teachers, you know, mm-hmm. had respect mm-hmm. for yourselves, you know, and then you get to Charlottesville High, and there's some different cultures clashing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that time, you would hear students talk about the fag this, fag that, you know, you hear about that fag club downtown, which they were referring to as Modowney's and the Silver Fox, which kind of... We're right there together. Me, mostly, I had been in Modowney's once when I was very, very young, and the Silver Fox was more my home at the time, you know. And once I started hearing about, oh, there's that gay club downtown, there's that gay bar, you know, that's where the fags go. I was like, oh, really?
Really?
I need to go check this out.
Well, tell me about, you've invoked a couple of names there. Let's talk about Modowney's and the Fox, and, you know, what did that first...
Early 80s for Modowney's.
Come about.
Very early. I was very young. I went in with an older guy mm-hmm. who was kind of a family friend. Not going to put name out because, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, now, who ran Modowney's?
A woman by the name of Jody.
Wasn't Joni.
Joni.
Joni Schatzman?
Yes.
Joni Schatzman ran Modowney's.
I met her maybe twice.
All right. And I missed Modowney's. I came to Charlottesville in 89.
Right.
So
okay.
You and I are about the same age.
Yes.
And
yes.
I came here to go to college.
Okay.
So I don't remember Modowney's. If it still existed by that point in time,
No, it was the Fox by then.
Tell me about Modowney's, because I missed that one.
The only thing I remember about it was it was a place to go and... You know, I was very young, so I was kind of intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a scar on the back of my leg from their wood stove that was in the middle of the room.
Oh!
So I will always have a scar. But
Modowney's had a wood stove. Well, that doesn't sound like your typical gay bar.
No, it wasn't. It was basically, if you want to use the words that we used to use, we had holes in the wall back then.
Right.
But they were homes.
Right.
You know, you didn't need a big fancy place to go. You need people back then. It's not like today where in order to draw people to anywhere, you have to have some kind of huge gimmick.
Right.
Back then, the draw was what we had in common, you know. And they also helped out the younger community. Back then was a lot different. Our, you know, as a youth coming out, we had people who would take us to these places and say, hey, you know, look, you're not the only one. A lot of my fond memories are the Silver Fox from Clyde Cooper and Mike Fitzgerald, who opened that. And they really gave us a place. You know, it was the kind of place that when you went there, you felt welcomed. You felt, I don't know, you felt like a family. You know, families argue, families fight, families mm-hmm. love. You know, it was basically that. No one judged you harshly because you were gay. They judged you, you know, in the gay community. Everybody judges everybody in every community, you know. So you have to live with who you are and what's around your surroundings. And I have to thank Clyde and Joni for what they did, because without them, it wouldn't have paved the way for where we're at today. It
must have taken a lot of courage at that time to open up an establishment like that.
I couldn't, you know, listening to Clyde talk sometimes about how fighting the city ordinance, arguing with just the officials. I couldn't imagine what he went through. For me, opening Impulse, we had a lot of roadblocks too. I don't think that Charlottesville really wanted another establishment like ours.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting to that point where, are we ever going to open this? Is it ever going to happen? You know, are we ever going to have a place for our community to feel comfortable, our community to rally around, and not just a place that's tolerant of the gay community, but, you know, hey, it's your home. Come and be who you are. You know, bring your family, bring your friends. It's a safe place, you know. And we kept trying and trying, and finally, you know, we found a place. We fought with the IRS for our status, you know, so.
Now, when you say you fought with the IRS for your status, you're talking about as a nonprofit?
Yes, yes, yes. Because at the time, the IRS was already a year and a half behind on, approving nonprofits.
Right.
And we had to go through the back door with one of their agents and mm-hmm. a lawyer and figure out, you know, why can't we open yet? Why can't we get our number early? Mm-hmm. You know, our status early.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we finally realized that, you know, being a membership club, each member's payment is considered a donation.
Mm-hmm.
And without our tax, you know, status for mm-hmm. the IRS, we were not able to start accepting donations. And that was a way of saying, you know, they have a rule, you know, you got to start somehow. I'm not exactly how it happened, but within 3 months we had our, you know, acceptance mm-hmm. from them. ABC accept us. Our landlord loves us. So, you know, we do everything right. We try to show the community that, you know, we're not what they think of when they think of a typical establishment like
well,
that.
Let's back up for a second again to the Fox. We were talking about the Silver Fox. And I remember
place.
as a UVA student, as an undergrad, riding my bike to the, you know, Lewis and Clark statue area and thinking that, you know, it was the end of the earth, right? I got as far from grounds as I had ever been.
Right,
where
right.
no UVA student has gone before,
yes,
right? You know?
Yes, yes.
And I remember discovering that there was a gay bar there and, mm-hmm. you know, what I heard a lot of stories about that bar in the 80s and that it was a particularly rough spot in terms of people would come by and throw beer bottles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember they had a patio that had this, like, 8-foot privacy fence around it.
Yeah. Yeah. They put the louvers up so they would face down. Then there was chicken wire on the inside so that when the bottles hit,
mm-hmm.
the shards wouldn't. But sometimes a wayward shard would make you through. You know, for me, I would have to park my car a couple blocks away because, like I said, you know, I'm from one of the large families in town, and
mm-hmm,
someone sees
mm-hmm.
one of my cars or my mom's car or someone, what was your car doing down there at the gay bar, you know? It was hard. You would get out of your car, walk across the street, you'd get slurs, you'd get beer bottles.
About what year are we talking about?
Lord, you're talking like 85 up until I get until we turned into a private club and 216 was established.
So the Fox wasn't a private club?
No, the Fox was owned by two gay men,
mm-hmm.
Clyde and Mike, and they were a couple.
Right.
And they worked Thursday through Sunday every week. Whether they were busy or not, they
right.
were still open.
But, I mean, when you say it turned into a private club, what was it before?
It was a restaurant bar, basically. You know, food, sandwich, light affair, not nothing
mm-hmm.
heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different counties would actually come. You know, we'd have Harrisonburg, Elkton, you know, Flubana,
mm-hmm.
you know, Culpeper. People would come as far as Orange and everything just to come to this mm-hmm. establishment. I think Clyde and Mike got to the point where they were tired. They wanted to retire, but they didn't want to just sell it off. They
mm-hmm.
wanted something.
They wanted it to stay a haven
community.
For the gay community.
Right. And somehow all the works got to talking about establishing a board, establishing a nonprofit, and that's when PTS was
Piedmont Triangle Society.
Yes, that's when they
were established.
That's
when it became Triangles.
Yes.
Is when it actually turned into a
And we were in the old spot. We were the
mm-hmm. I remember it being there.
It was a really weird transition because we were all used to coming in, handing our little $3 to get in,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, $3 a beer or, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got these membership rules.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all these different rules. And, you know, I think at the time it was a good thing. I think it was pushing us forward.
Why did they do it? Why did they make that shift?
I think it was there was a benefit of being open later,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think also there was a benefit of being able to get back to the community and, you know, you had a board that ran the club at the time, so you had all these different people from walks of life come together as a board, mm-hmm. and they have different opinions, and they've tried to help. They were like pillars of the community, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them not only put their time, but they put a lot of their own money into helping this establishment go further.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time it was a good thing. I think, you know, from the benefits we did to help get the larger space to, you know, get the ball rolling. We were all looking forward to the future and seeing that, you know, this is going to be a haven for us. You know, it's going to be a great place for, you know, generations to come.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, not bad mouthing anything. I think that it, like anything, if you're not careful and you nurture it right, you can lose your way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened in a way.
Well, Triangles became 216.
Yes, that's when they moved around the corner because that was the address of the
right.
building.
216 Water Street, right?
216 Water Street, yes.
Yes.
And it was an amazing feeling to move from a small space, a closet, if you will, home, because it was really was. It might have been small, but it was our home.
Right.
To this gigantic open thing that was like, oh my God, it's huge.
Lots of space.
Yes, yes.
Used to have to go up the fire escape stairs. Like,
yep,
there
the
were like these
stairs
big
up with
iron.
That.
Yeah. It wasn't a fire escape, but that's what always
it was iron
me of.
Metal.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And heels were not anyone's friends with those holes in them.
No. The combat boots still worked okay, but
yeah,
but the Queens had some issues.
Yeah, I just think that the Silver Fox was a good stepping stone. I think 216. When it came about was a great idea. I really do. I just think that nurturing it would have took it further. But
well,
like anything,
it didn't make it. You know, I mean, that's what you're alluding to.
It was
to.
Here for a long time.
It was here for a long time.
I was very happy that it was. It was sad that it was gone, and that's one of the reasons I thought, you know, I wanted to do something that would be part of the vision of when we first opened up 216. You know, it's a great thing that, you know, that we have a large straight crowd following. You know, the community is wonderful. We have a lot of straight members who basically support us now.
Well, so that club, and when I say that club, I mean the Fox Triangles,
right.
216. It was all kind of the same thing. It got bigger.
Yep.
It became a private club instead of just a bar.
Yep.
But it was all, it all felt very similar. And 216 actually moved. They at some point they were across from the parking garage,
mm-hmm.
on Market Street,
right.
In what used to be the old live arts
yeah.
black box space back there.
Yeah.
And then they were there for maybe a year or so,
mm-hmm.
Before they closed out. But it was always kind of a dance bar. It
yes.
was always a, you know, you'd show up and there'd be music pumping and,
right.
you know, people be drinking and dancing. And
yeah.
and that's kind of what you were doing. Go ahead.
The one thing they forget, though, is that, you know, yeah, they were a dance club. They did do a lot. But we also, at the time, you know, we did a lot of benefits for ASG,
mm-hmm.
For the community.
Now, ASG was AIDS Service Group.
AIDS Support Group.
Yeah. Okay.
Which I'm kind of very sad that they're not around anymore. For us growing up, when the epidemic, losing friends,
mm-hmm.
and dealing with that kind of stuff was very hard. And ASG makes it very aware, and not having awareness today is not a good thing in my
so
opinion.
So what came first, Muldowney's and the Fox or the AIDS epidemic?
Muldowney's probably and the Fox came probably about the same time that it was just starting to hit the news about the disease, not knowing what it is. You know,
right.
Let's label it the gay disease at first.
Right.
Which, you know, some people say, no, they didn't.
So you had sort of this whole kind of cohesion of the community into this clubs around the time that the community was threatened.
Right.
By this illness.
Right. And it's coming, it's like another, you know, you rally around each other then because of everything.
We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a second.
You're listening to Straight Talk on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. If you'd like to participate in the program, it's 434-284-9470. And now, back to your host, Andre Hakes.
Support for 94.7 Today is coming from Blue Moon Diner, a Charlottesville culinary icon, serving locally sourced diner fare from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m., including breakfast served all day. Blue Moon Diner also serves brunch from 9 till 3 every Saturday. Almost every weeknight, there's live music, including local legend Jim Wave on Wednesdays. You can check their full menu and the calendar at bluemoondiner.net. That's Blue Moon Diner, 512 West Main Street, serving the community since 1979.
So when we took a break, we were just starting to talk about the HIV epidemic,
right,
and how that sort of was part of the development of these clubs.
Yeah, to me, you know,
at least in Charlottesville, I mean.
Yeah, who knows what was going on elsewhere. We were a very strong community here. We did a lot of benefits. We did a lot of awareness. It comes to a point when you're losing 15 friends in a couple years span over a disease that, you know, people were, I don't want to say dumb to, but we really were, because we weren't sure everything. I mean, some people thought it was, you know, you spit on somebody, you touch somebody, you get near somebody, oh my God, you're going to get it.
Right.
You know, and people who had it didn't need that kind of hatred. You know, they needed love and support, and that's where we came in. And, you know, it was hard to watch your friends. It was hard to watch your friends pass because of it without knowing, you know, any kind of
what was happening.
Or what was happening. And I think ASG at the time, when it was starting in its younger days, was a good thing to help bring awareness. Like I said, awareness is a big thing. And today I don't think that, I think that people take it more for granted because there's a drug that helps. A drug that helps isn't a cure. It's just it's a Band-Aid, in my opinion. And I hate hearing, oh, I'm undetectable for 5 years, or, you know, I'm very healthy and undetectable, you know, but that doesn't matter. Undetectable doesn't matter.
You doesn't know? Mean you can't
it. Doesn't pass mean it. You can't pass it. And, you know, I date a younger guy, and he's from a different generation, but he'll tell you that his generation, it's that they don't even think twice about popping in the bed with somebody. I'm not saying every one of that generation. I'm just saying, you know,
well, that generation is more of the internet.
Yes.
Generation,
yes.
Too. I mean, yes. You know, you and I are old.
Oh, yeah.
We're old school.
We want to meet somebody. We go out to the bars. Yes.
So, yeah, that's
right.
You would go to the bar.
Right.
You would meet people.
Right.
You know, maybe, you know, if you were a lesbian, you would leave with the U-Haul.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not.
Get the Penske truck.
That's
yeah.
Right. But but now there's a bunch of different sites for
yeah.
this,
yeah.
These sort of hookup sites for straight and gay community,
oh,
but
yeah.
Like Grindr and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's sort of maybe what some of the young people are doing.
Yeah, the scary thing is that you sit there at the bar tonight. I mean, like last night, we were, you know, there's a bunch of people there dancing, singing, you know, for yourself singing, which everybody loves it when you sing. But you'll look around and there's 10 people on their phone trying to hook up. And it's like, I'm like, you're out in public. You are out at a club. You're
talking to people.
Your opportunity is gone because you're on your phone. One of the guys one night, he was actually on one of those sites, and he's one of the guys who frequent our club, and he's sitting there literally talking on his phone to somebody who's in the smoke room, not even knowing they're in the same building.
Wow. Okie dokie.
Until he tells the guy, well, why don't you meet me at Impulse?
And he says, I'm already
here in the smoking room. And the guy's like, really? I'm at the bar. And you think to yourself, are we that?
I wonder if that ended up being a good thing, like a happy thing that they were both at Impulse, or whether that like was like, ooh, way too scary. You know? Oh, you mean you're a real person.
Right. Well, even these apps, you know, like even Facebook will tell you these days, oh, this person is 2 minutes from you, or they're 100 yards from you. And it's like, I don't know. It's kind of scary because you don't even know who you're talking to. You don't know if that picture they sent you is the real deal or not. You know, for me, face-to-face is the best way.
Well, and there's not only that. I mean, when you talk about that, it makes me think about sexual predators and the internet and kids and, you know, some of the horrible things that I see in my profession. You know, maybe that, you know, maybe that makes me more skitsy about the whole internet thing.
Right. And that's why, you know, we've tried, and the UVA students moving to this town from another town, they don't know the town very well. And, you know, for the gay students or even the students who like to be around the gay crowd or whatever, it's hard for them to come to Impulse or, you know, to they don't know anything about us. So, you know, that's why we're trying to do what we're doing.
Well, Impulse
on Main Street
strikes me as different. It is different than 216 and the Fox and that whole scene. I mean, it is a show bar.
Yes.
It is a drag bar. And other bars would sometimes have shows, but they weren't structured around them quite the same way.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about how you ended up deciding to create this drag show bar kind of scene. How'd you get there?
I'm a drag queen.
No!
From old days. Oh. And for me, back in the day, you know, you could only do drag, but on Sundays. You couldn't go to the bar on Friday and Saturday night here in Charlottesville in drag.
Why not?
The owner of the bar did not like drag queens.
No, the owner of the gay bar?
Yeah.
The owner of the gay bar didn't want you to show up at the gay bar and drag.
Yeah, he actually would turn people away.
No, come on.
Yeah, we had people come all the way
from
Harrisonburg in face one night, and they told him straight up, you can't come in on Friday nights. And so we had to work very hard to get our Sunday night shows.
Right.
And then we convinced him after a while that, you know, if you let us do it on Friday night also, it would help. So he got a little more lenient. I don't know why, but there are a lot of, it's like anywhere.
What do you think drag means? And let me explain that question for a minute, right? Okay. You know, I think of, you know, when we would go to marches in the 80s and 90s, we'd go up to D.C. to the march or whatever, right? You know, and there would be, you know, people would be in colorful drag costumes, right? And they'd be doing whatever. And I remember thinking, this is kind of a cultural thing. It's kind of like going to Chinatown and seeing the people in the Chinese dragons, right? You know, going down the street in the parade. It's kind of a cultural artifact of the gay community. Yeah. And I wonder,
I think,
you know,
it's
what
an outlet, really. You know, for me, I was in theater.
Right.
And to me, I love the illusion. It's like my mother asked me one time, who used to steal my clothes all the time, my jewelry and everything. She used to get
you're
mad.
Supposed to,
you know.
You're supposed to steal hers.
Well, we did. But for me, it's an outlet of an expression. I like the illusion. Now, see, growing up, we weren't called drag queens. Mm-hmm. There are differences in drag queens, female impersonators, you know, that kind of thing. A drag queen isn't a person who's, like, outlandish, you know, and beautiful, and they wear these huge costumes and everything, and they're entertaining in that way, fun and energetic. You know, there's several of them in the area. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a female impersonator who tries their best to look like a real woman, you know, and tries their best to throw the illusion out. And I think it's just an outlet, really. I mean, the people who do it, I think they just have so much talent that there's no other outlet for them to do, so they throw drag on. And if you're good at something, do it. And our community rallies around drag queens like, I don't know why, but they do. They love us to death. And then you've got the ones who are like, oh, my God, that man is wearing a dress.
It's because you're brave. That's why. It's because people like courage.
Yeah, am I brave because I'm wearing a dress or the 6-inch heels I got on my feet?
Both.
Yeah.
brave for the dress and skilled for the 6-inch heels.
Yeah, like Angus wearing those 10-inch heels in the club. I mean, I'm just like,
were those 10-inch heels? They were impressive.
Yeah, he has a pair that's 9, a pair that's 10, and he wants a pair that's 13. Yeah, and he's already tall. I'm like, why do you...
Does Angus have a masochistic streak or, you know, what is that?
I
don't know about that.
No, but I think drag for me is basically, you know, it's an outlet. It's a way of being a part of your community, too, when you don't have any other in on a community when you're young. I guess you ask a drag queen, why do you want to be a drag queen? For me, it's not because I want to be a woman. For me, it's entertainment. It's fun. I like to see the shock and awe in people's faces and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's also a way of bridging the gap. Like Eddie's on Main Street, mm-hmm. you know, Impulse is being their sponsor to allow the UVA students to know, hey, on Tuesday night, it's Pride Night there. Let's go check them out, learn who Impulse is, and maybe they'll know that, hey, we are a community. So we're going to do drag shows there every fourth Tuesday, which
fourth
is this Tuesday.
Tuesday
coming up.
All right. Is that your first one over there?
First one.
No
yes.
way.
Yes. And we open at 8, uh-huh. and the show will start at 10. And it is
Eddie's is on the corner?
Yes. Yes. We're right beside
goodness.
The Virginian. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And we've done it 3 weeks now.
I might have never found my way downtown at all if, you know,
yeah.
you guys had had that going
yeah.
on.
Yeah, so we're doing that, and then we're doing Fellini's with Trey Wilkerson. He's going to do the shows on every first Sunday.
He's going to do drag brunch.
Yes, drag
right?
brunch.
So a yeah. whole other thing. Tell me about drag. What the heck is drag brunch?
Drag brunch is a fun way of waking up, drinking mimosas, eating, and watching a bunch of queens run around and
in 13-inch heels?
Yes, yes. And doing a song. It's fun. And like I said, when I say it, it's a way of bridging the gap. It's interesting to watch straight people who, or any kind of culture other than the gay culture, sit there and look at gays and go, okay, yeah, that person's gay. He's got nails. And but then you see a drag queen. They're like, ah, you know, it's like, that's a drag queen. Oh, my God, let's give it money. Let's talk to her, you know. She's got better jewelry than I do. You know, Angus and I went for a cruise, for the drag race cruise, and most of the time we wore a lot of jewelry, a lot of heels, and we weren't really in drag, but there were a lot of people who were not part of our community coming up to us, wanting to take pictures with us, giving us compliments, going, a lot of the ladies, oh my God, how can you wear those heels? And, you know, we even had husbands look at us and go, yeah, hers are off like in 5 minutes. Her feet kill her. But I just want people to know that, you know, Impulse is a place for fun, safe. You know, we do have a nightlife, you know, but we have events. You know, we do RuPaul's Drag Race. We have line dancing on Thursday nights. DJ Twinkie teaches it. And, you know, he's a hell of a
line
dancer.
Line dancing.
Yes. If you,
line
don't know how
dancing.
To land, if you don't know how to line dance and you've always wanted to do the wobble because you see everybody up there, mm-hmm. come to the club. He'll teach you how to do it. And the next time you get up there, your friends will be like, well, where'd you learn that at, you know?
Right.
And we have events like birthday parties. We've had a young lady, sweet 16, at our club. You know, we've had a wedding. We've had wedding receptions, you know.
Impulse is a little bar. When you come, it seems very small because you come up to this little parking lot. It's off of 29, and it's over by the, what is it, Ming Dynasty, the Chinese restaurant there,
yeah.
and the
Asian market,
the Hispanic yeah. store. What is it, Amanecer?
Yes,
is that
yes.
right?
I think that's how you pronounce
next
it.
Next to the Cavalier Diner.
Yes,
and you go in, and this is sort of, you know, it feels like lots of gay bars in that there's this little, you know, sort of storefront opening that
right.
you go in. It almost feels like a speakeasy. You
right.
know, you like
well,
go
it
around
did,
the corner.
It did at first when it was so dark. That was another thing is we've done a lot of remodeling with mm-hmm. lighting and making it feel more warm. But you're right. When it first walked in, the dark club feel.
Well, but
was
I can't
speakeasy.
Tell you. I mean, I can't think of the last time I showed up there that there I wasn't greeted by one of your security people.
Right.
You know, hey, how you doing tonight? I mean, you know, there.
Right.
So you guys have a ton of security out there,
yeah.
And it doesn't feel like, you know, big beefy guy. It's, you know, there are these ladies usually
yeah.
who
yeah.
are who I see out in the lot who are just sweet as they can be,
yeah.
right? You know,
and they're actually members of our club, so,
right?
You know,
so they're community.
Yeah.
And then you go in and you know you give them your ID at the window, so you check everybody's IDs,
yes.
right? And
yes.
you band everybody, and
yes.
you know you do a good job of that. And then you go up the stairs, and you kind of don't know what you're heading for, right? Because the stairs, they still feel a little kind of 1970 to me. There's something, you know, and then you get up there and there's this like really cool club.
Right, right.
But you wouldn't know it. Looking
right.
at it from the outside, you would
yeah.
never know
yeah.
What was up there. And it's really neat.
That's
kind of a little hidden treasure.
That's kind of the thing we were going for, that kind of unexpected roughness, but yet with a little soft here and there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I used to... Growing up, you know, most of the clubs we went to in the bigger cities were like loft styles. You know, they were
right.
very rough and, you know, industrial feel. And, you know, so we kind of wanted to do that loft style feel with a little bit of, you know, warmth with the couches and the lounge with the pool table, you know, that kind of thing. But yet you have the hard metal on the dance floor with the lights hitting it, with the soft wood, you know, because the wood's a lighter color. So it gives you kind of this feel like we took this industrial building and kind of threw the gay twist on it, if you will, you know. And as a gay man, I don't care what anybody says, we love to decorate and remodel. And I'm remodeling that thing every year, and everybody's like, you never know what you're going to see when you walk up here.
Well, that is true. There are some interesting artifacts in the area of the bar, but it's kind of neat that you've done that, and it's unexpected, and it's different in some ways than some of the other clubs we've had.
Right.
I mean, you've got the Thursday night, you've got the line dancing thing mm-hmm. going. Friday night, you've got karaoke,
yep.
which is a hoot.
Yeah.
Saturday night, you've got these drag shows.
Yes.
And
then every now and then on Sundays, we're going to start opening up for dinner theater. We're going to start serving dinner.
You're kidding.
And doing shows and dinner, yeah.
Dinner theater.
We're in the works of getting everything we need to do to start food. And then once a month, we want to do like a stand-up, like, I guess, open mic thing, like a couple queens come in, somebody might want to do comedy, whatever it might do that night, and then mm-hmm. serve dinner while they're putting on a show. So we're going to try different things.
Got you. Well, it's kind of a neat thing.
Yeah.
You know, with Pride that we just had this weekend, there's been some chatter on Facebook. I've actually heard some people saying things like, you know, why do we really need these gay organizations anymore? Do we really need to be doing this? Do we need to have these things? And I wonder if you could speak to that, because I get a sense that maybe you have some thoughts about why we might need these places.
I think we need them for our youth. I think that, you know, we've come a long way, and I'm very thankful for the people who came before me because of what they went through. But I think that if we start dropping these types of organizations and start getting overcomfortable, we're going to lose how far we've come.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth today, talking to them, it scares me because they don't know what we went through to have the rights that we have. And it also scares me that they don't know certain things about history, like where the Pink Triangle came from. Why does the gay community embrace the Pink Triangle? Or I should say the older community embraces the Pink Triangle.
Right. And where did the Pink Triangle come from, Kevin?
Nazi Germany. Yes. Not only were the Jews labeled with the Star of David, mm-hmm. but the Pink Triangle was a label for the gays. And the Nazis labeled them that way. You can look it up. I've actually had to tell people where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I embrace very strongly, because growing up, that meant to me that that was a symbol for us, and that we had to embrace it to show that, you know, they may have used it in a negative way, but we're going to use it in a positive way. And,
well, and,
you
and
know,
to remind everyone
where not to be again.
That,
exactly.
You know, these are your brothers and sisters, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to help each other.
Yes. And without these organizations, the youth will not have a place to turn. I mean, people have gotten too comfortable, I think, with society being the younger group, just because they can go somewhere and they're not being ridiculed or being threatened at every turn. Doesn't mean it's not still happening. Like the smaller towns.
Well, in a way, our job as a community, you know, has been to make the world better mm-hmm. for the younger generation. And in a way, the more success we have
right.
at it,
right.
The more sort of obsolete mm-hmm. we become. And that might be a good goal, ultimately. I don't know. But it doesn't feel like... It doesn't feel to me like we're there.
Right. I don't think that... I think even if we get to there, we still need it to bridge the gaps between these children who are being raised by people who make... You know, I don't know how to say it. You know, you still have families out there who raise children to hate. And I think, you know, with a gay society, I think it's always going to be needed there. Because it's not just for us, but it's also to bridge that gap with the straight society, to show, you know, we're all human. We all make mistakes. We all have problems. We all, you know, not everyone is pretty. You know, it goes back to a poem that my sister's wedding I just performed. You know, the word perfect, what is it? It's not real, you know. So why do we all pretend we're perfect? Because we're not. There's no one perfect out there.
Well, we're going to take an imperfect break now, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Straight Talk on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. If you'd like to participate in the program, it's 434-284-9470. And now, back to your host, Andre Hakes.
Yeah, but yeah, it's interesting.
So, welcome back to Straight Talk. I'm Andre Hakes, and I'm talking to Kevin Morris Lewis about the gay community in Charlottesville and in the wider gay community. You know, we were talking about why we need these organizations to continue and the sort of the pink triangle and and that whole issue. And then, of course, there's the rainbow flag, right, which just always seemed to me like a much more joyous symbol.
Growing up, it was, for us, it was either the pink triangle or the lambda symbol.
I remember the lambda.
But the lambda was mostly lesbians.
I remember there's a bookstore in D.C., Lambda Rising. You remember Lambda Rising? Are they still there?
No. Sad.
No.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember, like, you know, almost like making a pilgrimage there.
You have to. It was the only place you could buy certain stickers or certain books whatever. D.C. trip.
That's right. You go to the bar in Southeast.
Yes.
And then hit a hotel, and then in the morning head over to Lambda.
And I think the thing is with these groups is that, you know, we need to, you know, it's a thing with the community. We need to all come together and realize that, you know, we're here for one reason only, and that's not ourselves, but for everyone. And that's the way I look at it. You know, I don't look at, if I wanted to make $1 million, Impulse would not be where I would be at. I do this for my community. I do this for the people who come. I do it for, like last night, there was a transgender that comes to our club. And it makes me feel good when I have certain people walk up to me from time to time and say, thank you so much for giving me a place to come, be comfortable, and be myself. And that right there, I don't care if I have 20 people in the building or 5 people in the building at the time, that is why I do it. It's because there are people out there that don't have a place to go, who don't have a place to have an outlet of socializing with others because they get ridiculed. A lot of these transgenders, you can tell that it's a guy becoming a girl, or it's a guy who's dressing like a girl because that's what they like to dress like, a girl, and go out.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll get ridiculed for that. But at our club, we don't
Homie
look
don't
at
play
anyone.
That.
No, we don't play that. You come to our club, you are who you are. We don't care what, you know, what your walk of life is. As long as you come in that club with a happy attitude, an attitude that, you know, whether we're gay, straight, bi, whatever, you're there to have a good time.
Well, and there are often a lot of straight people over at Impulse,
too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have a large straight following, especially after hour. But we've also have a lot of these straight followers that are our paid members,
mm-hmm.
not just a guest.
Right.
And it feels good to have a lot of them.
Well, the shows are fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember at some point taking a couple of my law partners over to watch the Silver Fox reunion drag show.
Yes.
And they loved it.
Yeah.
They were just hooting and hollering. So it can be a real good time.
Yeah, we're entertaining. We have, you know, all kinds of things going on. We used to have playhouses come in, like Play On. They actually did a few things. And I think our community at the time was not ready to look upon us as a place to go to see a thing like that. You know, we had the reputation of being a seedy bar, a shady place.
Are you a shady place?
No.
I don't think you're particularly shady.
No. We do have some shady people, but that's... That's everywhere. But no, we're not a shady bar. No, we try to learn everyone's name that comes in there. We try to be friends with everyone. You know, my staff, I have people who visit us from out of state, and they'll text me the next day and say, oh, my God, best place. You know, you may not be the largest, but the way you make people feel, it's like home, like you've known me forever.
Well, you know, I noticed last night hanging out there, it was Angus's birthday.
Yes.
And he was dancing with his mom.
Yes.
Somebody was singing a karaoke song or whatever, but they were out there dancing, and it was so sweet.
Yeah.
It was just sweet. Who brings their mom to the gay bar?
Well, it was my surprise for him to get her up here from Lynchburg for his birthday.
From Lynchburg, no less.
On the other side of Lynchburg, no. But she reminds me so much of my mom. My mom knew half the gay community before I even did. But yeah, his mom is very supportive. When people bring their moms or their family, it's amazing to see the family just be so happy for the people.
I've seen a lot of that. I've seen a lot of family members over there. And, you know, last night I ended up sitting there talking to a guy who was clearly an athlete, looked like a basketball player, great big, guy.
Right,
and he introduced me to his wife, and I was like, you know, what are you and your lovely wife doing at the gay bar on karaoke night? And he's like, well, that's a fair question, right? You know, and he said he lives in the neighborhood and he knew somebody else who was having a birthday.
Right.
And, you know, they were just hanging out and they were really sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, people would be amazed of, you know, like I said, we have all walks of life. I mean, okay, this was the funny thing. And I felt so bad, but, you know, the law is the law, right? We had this woman turning 73, and she was in our club one night with all her friends from D.C., Maryland. 73, mind you, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're up in there dancing, partying. All of a sudden, someone comes out of the smoking lounge and says, I think the birthday girl is a little too happy. I was like, what do you mean? So we go in there, and yes, she has done fired up something she should not have fired up at 73 years old.
Well, she should have fired it up at 73, maybe, but maybe
not in my club
here,
right? And so we
I'm Colorado somewhere. Beyond.
Yeah. So we told her, we were like, you know, we're going to have to ask you to leave. And, you know, this was close to closing anyway. And she was like, oh, I understand. I'm so sorry. She said, I just forgot where I was. I was like, honey, where do you go that you can... But the whole point was that she did something she wasn't supposed to. We took care of it. But at 73 years old, I mean, up in a gay club, dancing, partying, and, you know, the rest of the group couldn't, none of them, Golden Girls, honey.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have that support. It's good to feel like a family there.
Yeah.
We had you guys came out to Louisa County, out to Mineral, on, what was it, Thursday night?
Thursday.
And there was a parade in Mineral that was a homecoming parade for the football season, I guess.
Right, right.
Amy Marshall of Seville Pride had posted something up on the Facebook, the LGBT and Allies page, and she probably posted it other places too, but that's where I saw it.
Yeah, that's where I saw it too, yeah.
And said, basically, you know, there's a GSA out here, and, you know, last year they had rocks thrown at them. The kids in the Gay Straight Alliance who went with the homecoming parade, you know, got harassed.
Right.
Why don't we all go out and, you know, cheer for them? And you guys came out. I saw you out there, and there was maybe 20 people or so
at least
out there.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt like, you know, kind of stepping into 1950.
Yeah.
You know, this parade and it felt very small town. Mineral's a tiny little place.
Yes, yes.
And we got there and we sort of whipped out our rainbow flags and all sort of stood on the side together,
right.
In a place and, you know, waited for them to come by and, you know, cheered for everybody and waved at everybody. And it was an interesting experience for me. I wonder, you know, the kids came and they, they had a big banner, and I think Pride made them the banner.
That's what I heard.
Because the word was that the principal at the high school said to the kids, you know, you can't use your banner. You have a homemade banner, and you can't use it.
Right.
That's what Lisa Green told me.
Right, right.
And that they had to get permission slips signed and all this kind of crazy stuff. Yeah. And, you know.
My question is, did everybody else who walked in that parade, did they have to have permission slips?
Well, you know, I'm wondering about that.
Right. And I think it's sad that, you know, there were so many that wanted to walk in it, either whether they were gay or not, they wanted to support, but yet they were put on the hot sheet by saying, yeah, you can, but take this to your mom and dad and have them sign it.
Right.
And then you have so many drop out because they know the mindset that some of these people's parents are in.
Well, it felt like, it felt a little like Bristol where I grew up, you know, being there. And it reminded me why we need these organizations,
exactly.
Why we need Pride, why we need the bars, why we need, community organizations for folks to get together.
And us standing on the side of the road with flags, hooping and hollering when they came by, you could see the light in their eyes and the smiles on their faces that, you know, oh my God, we are not alone. And that's what I want our organizations to do. I don't want us to concentrate on who we are and what we're going to get out of it. What is our youth going to get out of it? How can we be role models for them to say, hey, you're gay. It's okay to be gay. It's okay to be who you are. No matter what anyone says, you are you. You know, don't live for somebody else, because if you do, 20 years down the road, you're going to regret it.
Well, there were a couple of cops marching with those kids this year.
Yes, I thought that was quite interesting.
Roland Winston out of Richmond told me he had made a few phone calls when he heard about what had happened before. And they had two deputies. They had a deputy in front of that group and a deputy behind them. And on the one hand, how sad. I mean, you know, the future farmers of America didn't need police protection.
No.
But at the same time, good.
Yeah.
Good. I bet nobody threw any rocks.
No.
So, you know, I think it was really valuable for the community to do that.
Right.
I think that's the kind of thing we need to be doing.
And getting your voice heard by just not really saying anything sometimes is a lot stronger than anything. You know, just standing there with a flag, not even saying a word, puts out more than a word, I think, because it shows them, you know what, I don't need to talk. I'm going to let it do, you know, I'm going to let the flag show it itself. I'm going to let who I am show you. I'm going to stand right here, support, and you're not going to move me.
Well, and you felt a little bit of what the kids must feel, much less, but a little bit of it, a little bit of this, when we first got there, you know, there weren't that many people there yet of us,
right?
Here we are. I remember, like, unfurling the flag out of our cars and sort of walking over there and being like, okay, you know, are we going to get our butts kicked?
Are we the only three here?
Yeah. Right, you know, but then there was a group of, you know, five or six other people who were there already, and we all sort of found each other, and then more and more people started coming up.
Now, so you see that right there, our generation. Just what you said, unrolling the flag, feeling that, you know, that kind of tension we were feeling.
Right.
But then when we found our group, it's like the weight lifted. We were ready.
Well,
imagine
once,
what these kids feel.
Once there were 20 of you, too, it started to feel less likely you were going to get your butt kicked.
Exactly. So imagine what these kids feel
because they'd have
like
to fight everybody.
Right. I know from my point of view, if I was one of these kids looking, oh my God, we're walking in
my
whole town. And then you see, oh my God, there's, you know, so it's like,
there's a bunch of people who are here
just for us.
Yep.
And I think that's a good feeling for them.
Well, you know what else? I liked how the group stayed there from the beginning of the parade to the end.
Yes.
And cheered and clapped for everybody.
Yes.
And, you know, part of that is also saying, hey, you know, we're not here to make trouble. I think there was some concern on the part of the school that, you know, we might be going to incite a riot or some crazy, you know. No, you know, we're just here to clap.
I think it's amazing that whenever the gay community wants to come together and support something, people immediately think, oh, my God, they're going to cause, what kind of problem are they going to cause?
Right.
It's like, you know, we're not here to cause any problems. We're here to
We're just here to
be a solution to
clap
a problem.
And make the kids feel loved.
Exactly.
That's all, and supported. And,
right. And we closed that night to go do that because we thought it was more important to support our community, whether Louisa, Mineral, whatever, is not even an immediate community, mm-hmm. but it's the youth.
It's close enough that
right.
it falls on the folks.
And it can trickle this way. And if, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, awareness, keeping ourselves aware to the community, keeping these organizations aware to the community makes people know, hey, we're here. You know, we're here for everyone. We're not going to go away just because.
Did you have any bad experiences that night? Did anything happen? No, everything went okay for you.
Yeah.
It went okay. I mean, I the only thing I noticed was the Shriners were coming by.
I did see one of them say something to y'all, but I couldn't hear what he said. And then I heard you tell me and two other people tell us what he said, and I was like, "Oh my God, really?"
This guy, the little guys are driving their little cute little cars around and their mini bikes, and they're all being cute, right? And then this man who's one of them, with that Shriner
outfit,
he walked up to us. And he pointed at everybody standing in the group there, and he said, "Y'all are criminals. Y'all are a bunch of criminals. You're just, I looked at the guy, and I said, "Yeah, okay, well, we love you too, Have a great night, But it was, it was a reminder of, there's a reason to be here.
Right, and then there's that boy that was on the boat. The balls they throw in the ball pit.
No, talk to me about that.
There was one of the boats, I guess it was for a boat company or whatever, and it had a bunch of people on the back. And those little balls you can see in the ball pit?
Yeah.
Well, he was just kind of nonchalantly throwing them out.
Uh-huh.
And then when he got to us, it was like he was beaming them towards us. And it's like this little plastic ball that kind of by the time it got near us, it would be kind of fizzled out.
Right.
But his face was completely priceless. And from what I understand, Angus went to high school in Louisa with him, because that's where Angus went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So this hit home for him hard, going there and being supportive of the high school children, the kids, because
right.
of what he went through in Louisa High School.
So was the kid like throwing them like, "I'm going to hit you guys"?
Oh, yeah. Wishing it was something else, I think, because the way he beamed it. You don't need to do a baseball beaming with these plastic balls. I mean, it literally. And even a couple of people who were sitting near us, one lady and her daughter in particular, who had their picture taken with Angus, said, "Oh, my God, he is literally trying to hit y'all with it." And Angus said, "Please, what's it going to do? It might knock a fly out the air, but,
Well, if we've redirected the throwing of objects away from the kids,
exactly to us,
then
I'm happy.
Bring it on.
Exactly.
And I like little plastic balls a lot better than rocks.
I would agree. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say thank you for coming in again.
Well, thanks for having me
to talk about this.
Yeah.
It's been really neat, and I love your club.
Well, we like you.
And you just keep right on doing what you're doing, man. It's a fine thing to do.
One step at a time is what I say.
I hear you.
Yep.
This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You have been listening to Straight Talk, a local program dealing with law and social justice issues produced right here in Charlottesville. Have a great weekend, y'all.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hayes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.